So I wanted to say a few words about bringing the practice home. Some of you have a regular practice and some of you don't. And if you don't have a regular practice, this first part might be helpful. So it's, you know, daily sitting naturally helps you be mindful during the day. And being mindful during the day helps your sittings be a lot more focused. And as I mentioned, I think at the beginning of the retreat, it's like what I call a virtuous cycle, the opposite of the vicious cycle, right? You know, where they reinforce each other. The more you're present, the easier it is to be present, regardless of whether it's during the day while you're washing dishes or talking to someone, or whether it's in the cushion. The habit of the mind becomes much easier just to be here. This is where I am. So to develop a regular sitting practice, for me, I like to view it as creating a container, a supportive container. What are the factors that really help us stay with it day after day? And one of the things that really helps a lot of people is to do it at the same place at the same time. And sometimes to make that place a little bit special. Some people have altars. You know, a friend of mine, He would put dead things on his altar because they'd remind him of impermanence, you know. And it's like, you know, we can't wait. We it's now, you know. We don't know when we're going to die. And, you know, so this would be like his, you know, his reminder, you know. It's, you know, very, very inspiring as long as he removed them in time, you know. you know, creating, and if you can't, it doesn't work for your life to do that. You know, it's still having an idea, you know, thinking about it ahead of time, what will support you to do this on a regular basis. One of the things I mentioned yesterday is having a meditation buddy, you know, someone who you either sit with them or you call them. You know, you make some agreement that way that really supports you both. If you live in this area, you know, this area is kind of an embarrassment of riches and dharma. You know, there's so many sitting groups and so many day-long retreats. And so doing those on a regular basis, sitting with others, is really helpful. One of the things I used to do, I had my little, you know, routine. I change it over the years, you know, as things change in me, as to what inspires me. But I would I had the Buddha's little instruction book. It was this little tiny book that Jack and Kornfield and Gil wrote together, you know, and it would just like have a line or two. You know, and I would always like read it right before I sat. So things like that, you know, just reading Dharma books on a regular basis, just to keep you engaged as your life might get busy. Of course, listening to Dharma talks, you know, there's just an amazing amount of wonderful Dharma talks online. And for some people, keeping a meditation journal can be really inspiring. You know, because you, it helps you really recognize what you're doing. You know, oh yeah, my last sitting, I fantasized about, you know, my vacation for, you know, 44 out of the 45 minutes, you know. Okay, so maybe next time, you know, a little bit less. One other thing, though, that I've used for a long time is taking a moment at the beginning of my sitting and focusing on why, my intention on sitting. You know, that what I want in my life is I want to be free of suffering. I want to be free of all the concerns that are unnecessary in this life. And I want my heart to be open. I want to be able to love freely, you know. And so keeping that at the forefront for me, every time I sat, you know, want to be liberated. I want to be free, you know. So to me, that was always like, oh, yeah, that's why I'm doing this. Instead of fantasizing a vacation. So see what supports you. See what kind of container can really support your practice. And if you, you know, one of the other things, if you have a regular practice, but it's been, sometimes you go through these kind of plateaus where it's like we're kind of uninspired, really focusing on our intention. What's our deepest intention? And take the time to really connect with that. What is your deepest intention? And it might change its flavor in 6 months. So ask it again freshly. You know, what is it? You know, it might have a different quality. You know, sometimes I focused more on practicing for others. And other times I've practiced more on, you know, alleviating my own suffering, you know, and just depending what's really up for me at that time. So let it be fresh. So in mindfulness in daily life, we want to be aware and relax into the moment, no matter what it is, no matter what we're doing. And, you know, I like to think of it as being to have the mind and body in the same place. So how much of the time are we driving the car and we have no idea who's actually driving? You know, we've gone 50 miles without any awareness. So can we have the mind and body in the same place? One of the ways to actually train, because you can train mindfulness in a very conscious way, in mindfulness in daily life. And so one of the things that I started with was brushing my teeth mindfully. And so I would think of my, like some of you, you know, count breaths. So it's a little bit similar to that. You know, we've got 32 teeth, right? Some of us do, you know, but, so you know, I just divide into four quarters, you know, and I would just, you know, take 2 minutes to brush my teeth. That's what they recommend. So it's 2 minutes of mindfulness three times a day. And it's a practice, it's a concentration practice, actually, because you're really carefully paying attention both to the mindfulness and the steadiness of keeping your attention. It really increases your mindfulness muscle. And so you feel the contact of the bristles on the gum. It's a sensation you're focusing on, not the idea of brushing your teeth, but the actual sensation of where it's making contact. And, you know, take those couple of minutes you know, you'll develop, it starts bleeding into other things. It's really wonderful when we take practices on like that. The way I did it was I started with that, and a month later I added another activity, you know, which was in the shower, you know, actually feeling myself, you know, the water on me, which is really pleasurable, you know. And so much of the time, you know, I'd shower and my mind would be on work and all this other stuff. And it's like I actually enjoy my showers a lot more when I'm mindful. You know, I like water a lot. So then the next thing I use is washing the dishes. And just very slowly, I built these little practices in my day that I would always be mindful. You know, then eventually it just all starts integrating with everything else. So, you know, if that inspires you to do that, I'd really recommend it. Some of the other things that have been particularly helpful to me is having a very quick way to connect with the body. And, you know, one of the quotes that really moved me from the Buddha is, you know, with dripping drops of water, even a water jug is filled. And really that one moment of mindfulness is significant. As I said, the other day, any thought you have predisposes you to have it again. So if you have one moment of mindfulness, it predisposes you to have another moment of mindfulness. So this is how we train anything. and how we cultivate anything. And so to not underestimate that one moment, you know, here you are in the middle of an argument and you go, oh, I'm supposed to be mindful, aren't I? You know, and, you know, you just connect with your body, even if it's just 1 second and then you're caught up again. That 1 second helps develop that, the tendency of the mind to start to continue being mindful. As I mentioned yesterday, one of my favorite ways of doing that was to take one deep breath, breathe, relax, and open to what's next. So even if you're in the middle of, being really rushed, you've got that moment to do that. You know, it lowers your stress levels. Just by doing that, just your stress levels go down throughout the day. Probably the practice that was kind of the most significant for me that I started doing, I started after a retreat, is, I spent a lot of time at the computer, and sometimes hours and hours and hours and hours. I was on retreat and I was feeling, came home, I was really, kind of floating on air, came home and sat down to do my email and hours and hours later, I felt kind of this heaviness, and this tightness and I realized, that wasn't good for me to do that. And so, I decided that I would, first of all, get up regularly, when I'm working, but be mindful every time I get up off a chair, out of the sitting position. And so if, get out of the car, to walk to the front door, that's a, 10, 15 steps to be, mindful steps, not necessarily slow, but mindful. And if I walk to the bathroom, if I walk to the kitchen to get a glass of water, if I walk, to a room to get a coat, so whatever these little short pieces, and especially when I'm working, because it allows my mind to disengage from the what I'm caught up in, it's very easy when you're doing work, when you're on a computer, to be really so engaged in it and so attached to not letting go of that, that tension, that focus, and so creating a flexibility. Okay, I'm focused on work and I'm focused on my body, work, body. It created an ease between the two, and which is a little bit of what you guys are doing this morning, right? We're sitting and then we're cleaning and sitting and cleaning, and so just gradually beginning to see that as we go back into our daily lives, what we're really looking for is the ease of leaving the sitting and staying mindful in what we're doing. And then when we're engaged and trying to get something done, to be able to go, okay, that's enough now. We're going to go be quiet now. And that flexibility of mind is what we're developing. So a couple of things I'd like to mention also. The other thing that I've incorporated into my daily life, into my work, is I do, I don't get quite as much, but I used to get like at least 100 emails a day, and none of them were junk mail. They had to be done, something done with, And it was always like I'd look and I'd go, oh God, 40 more, and especially after retreat, you see like 350, 50 after, I decided to connect with the person that I'm emailing for a moment in my heart and mind, and smile and connect. So whether it's somebody I didn't know, let's say I'm, writing, just somebody, something very functional, doesn't matter. For a moment to think about this is a human being, who's receiving this. you know, it's not that I'd spend any more time writing the email and being flowery or you know, particularly more wordy, but it's for me, you know, it's that my, you know, I allowed myself to connect with my heart, this appreciation of this other human being at the other end, and I'd smile. You know, smiling kind of just helps lighten me up. And so that's been a practice I've done for many, many years. If you think you want to try it, try it. It's wonderful. And the last thing I want to mention is we do a lot of waiting. You know, somebody brought that up in one of the groups, you know, waiting in line, waiting at the grocery store, waiting at the doctor's office, waiting in traffic, especially in the Bay Area. And to transform waiting into our meditation practice. You know, so instead of standing at the grocery line, you know, and saying, oh, I got into the worst line, boy, I blew it, that line's much shorter, and oh, I've got time to meditate, how wonderful, I was a little rushed today. And so there's so much opportunity for practice, you know, and that's the thing about this practice. Everything that happens in our lives, unwanted, wanted, we fold into our practice. We say, yes, yeah, that too. I can be with that too. And so it's a lot of time to practice. So Nikki, I didn't leave you much time. If you had anything you wanted to add.
What you said was wonderful.
Okay, great. And so now we have a little time for the manager announcements. So, Doug.